So this is part two, and as I said, we've looked at the idea of Therese's life and that moment of conversion when she was 14. So now a few minutes looking at her understanding of the love of God and of faith. So what was her faith? What did it mean for Therese, the little flower, to believe? How did she understand God? How did she live through her faith in her short life? And this isn't the heart of it, but nearer the end, how did she cope and understand, cope with and understand some of the difficulties that she went through in faith and that we might be going through, or we might go through when we're much deeper than we are in 20 years' time or something. So one little story about Therese, which is quite useful, and she saw this as being a significant story, was when she was very young, 3 or 4, Leonie, big sister, remember, brought her a basket of dolls, clothing and accessories that Leonie said, I'm too big for all this stuff now. So there was little Therese and Celine sitting down, and Leonie brings this basket and says, you choose what you like from this, choose what you want from this, and then you can keep it. And so Celine goes to the basket and she looks through it all and she finds a nice piece of braid that she really likes, and she says, I like this, I'm going to keep this. And Therese gave a quick look into the basket. She picked the whole basket up and she says, I want it all. And she walks off with the basket. Now, another silly little story. There's 1,000 stories we could tell of Therese or of your own life about anecdotes that happened. But Therese and others have seen this as a really symbolic. You remember earlier on I said Therese was very stubborn. Therese was very passionate and truthful and all or nothing. When she believed something, she believed it. When she wanted something, she wanted it. If she did want everything, she didn't pretend that she only wanted one thing. And she took people at face value. If they said, here's 1,000 things, take what you want, if she wanted it all, she took it. It's very logical, isn't it? And passionate. Head and heart. And this is a key to Therese's approach to life and to her spirituality, which is all or nothing. If it's true, it's true. If it's meaningful, it's meaningful. And she was someone not to hold anything back if there was no reason to hold it back. Later on, in 20 minutes or whenever, I do want to touch on some difficulties that Therese went through and some real darkness that she struggled with. So she did. But it's really important to say at the beginning that before and beyond all of the struggles, the core of Therese's faith was a knowledge of the love of God. She had an unshakable conviction that God was the beginning and the centre and the end of everything. She believed. She had this faith in her bones, and she learnt it. In one way, she's a very boring, ordinary, but beautiful example of what it is to grow up in a context of a living faith and for that to become part of you. It doesn't mean, as some secularists would say today, that you're brainwashed. It means you grow up seeing and living something beautiful so that you appreciate its beauty and its truth. And she learned her faith from her family, from her church, from the church, from the scriptures, from the stories that she learned, from the catechism. She believed it, and her whole desire from very early on in life, and especially from that moment of conversion, was to love God and to let herself be loved by him. That defined everything about her. So, in a minute, sure, this isn't easy, it's dark sometimes, it's confused. She's often working out exactly what this means, which is what we are doing as well. But it has to be said, and sometimes this is left out of Therese's story, because people rush to the later chapters of the story of the soul and they talk about all the darkness. But you have to say first that Therese's faith is marked by a fundamental confidence in God's existence and his love and her love for him and her wanting to love him. To quote from her, "You know, God, I've never desired anything else than to love you. My ambition is for no other glory." What a thing for a young woman to say. "I've never desired anything else than to love you." Remember, keep this in context. It doesn't mean she doesn't love other things. She loved her family, she loved laughing, she loved writing poems and writing plays, and she loved things. But what she means is, the heart and the foundation of everything has been my desire to love God. And I think for us, here we are in the middle of our retreat now, we've slowed down a bit, we've appreciating the peace and the space, is just to reflect on that this afternoon and in exposition tonight. We can get very complicated with the issues in our faith, but there is a simple issue, which is God at the centre of our lives or not? And we know he should be, and we probably would be brave enough to say we want him to be. I don't think we'd come on retreat otherwise, but just, we have to ask that honestly. Is God in the centre of my life, or is something else, or is nothing? Am I just spinning round various things? And even someone with a profound faith in God, like I hope yourselves and me, we can still have moments in life, or in fact a long time in life, when really God is at the periphery. He's something we do, he's someone we acknowledge now and then, but he's not really at the centre of my heart, of my prayer, of my choices, of my priorities. Doesn't mean all I ever think about is God. Doesn't mean I go off and be a priest or a nun. Most of you, quite rightly, most of your time and energy is work and friendships and family, quite rightly. But within all that, is the Lord at the centre? And am I doing that as part of my love for him and with his help? So that really is a key question. And to ask it honestly this evening in prayer, and just to ask it very simply and to see what happens and to see what comes to the surface, and to say to him at the very least, "Lord, this is hard and I want you to be the centre and I'm not sure how, and show me what needs straightening out or putting right, or just drawing on. Maybe there's nothing negative here, but just I need to grow, and it's a wonderful opportunity." What did this mean to Therese? How did she love God? And well, she was really balanced in her faith and in her theology. She knew that to love God was to do his will, as well as many other things, but you can't love God if you're not trying to do his will. That's what the Lord's Prayer is, isn't it? "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as in heaven." This is what the beautiful meditation in St. John's Gospel is all about, in the Last Supper. "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." We can't avoid that. She writes, "How I want to apply myself to always doing, with the greatest abandonment, the will of God." That's lovely. Not just, "You're forcing me to do this," but I want to have that freedom That word's come up already today. That abandonment to love you and to do your will. Another quote: I know of no other means of reaching perfection but love. Love, how well our heart is made for that. And I think that's again the theological balance of Thérèse, which is, here's me, I want to love you and it's my duty to love you, but this isn't because it's just something you're forcing me to do, it's because my heart is made for love. So really, I do find my fulfillment and my happiness in loving you, but it's not because I'm obsessing about being happy all the time. It's a paradox that we find ourselves by losing ourselves. It's the paradox of the Beatitudes. Blessed, blessed, happy are you who are poor, who mourn, who weep. It's easy, she says, to please Jesus, to enrapture his heart. You only have to love him without looking at yourselves, without spending too much time examining your own faults. Isn't that nice? Christianity is not complicated. Love Jesus. Sure, go to confession and think about life sometimes, but don't obsess too much about your own life or your own faults. Just get on with loving the Lord and loving others, and everything else will fall into place. So Thérèse was very rooted and grounded in that love. She wasn't afraid of everything, of anything, because she loved God, he loved her, and she knew that, and that was enough. And it's really the expression of that phrase in the first letter of St. John, perfect love casts out fear. She became a saint because she loved, not because she was afraid. And that's what we're called to do. The development of the little way, what became known as the little way, her key to the Christian life, it was realizing that this love she wanted to give and receive, that she couldn't love as she would like to. So I've said, in one sense, she's a very simple person. She knew Jesus loved her and she wanted to love him back. But the development of her spirituality came with the maturing of what that meant. So she realised, as we all do, that love is hard, and that our own weaknesses and failures hit us in the face at certain times in our life. To quote her, the more one advances, the more one sees the good is still far off. And then she says, and now I am simply resigned to see myself always imperfect, and in this I find joy. So part of this growing in love is not giving up on loving, but it's realizing that I am loving as someone who is very weak and imperfect. So it's accepting one's own weaknesses and knowing and trusting that the Lord still loves us anyway, and he wants us to keep walking and keep loving even in our weakness. In other words, knowing I am loved despite my lack of love is actually the deepest knowledge of love we can have. And not giving up, which is what we're tempted to do when love is difficult or when faith is difficult. So, put it this way, Thérèse, and I haven't got to the really difficult stuff yet, but just in ordinary life, quite early on, Thérèse realised she had a crisis, in other words. Oh, to be loving is difficult, it's harder than I thought. But instead of giving up, she said, okay, the Lord still wants me to love in my weakness, and so I'm going to trust that he'll help me to do that. And the last part of this introduction, is to say, I've talked about the love of God and family, but just, I won't say much about this, but her faith was rooted in the church, the life of the church, and in the sacramental life as well. So that's for another talk, really. But she had a very strong devotion to the Eucharist. I've talked about how important, almost a mystical experience she had at First Holy Communion. She had a real desire to receive her First Holy Communion, to receive communion regularly, in a time when it wasn't so encouraged. So, love of the Eucharist, love of Holy Communion, a very passionate devotion to Our Lady, and to the saints, to the Holy Family, and as we heard, to Jesus in his different manifestations, to the infant Jesus, the child Jesus. And more, as she entered into the mystery of suffering, a devotion to the Holy Face, meaning Jesus in his passion, in his suffering. So that's the introduction to Thérèse's love of God. But this grew, this blossomed into a spirituality, a theology of spiritual childhood. And I want to just look at what that means now. It wasn't just we all ought to love God. Thérèse, from very early on, wanted to be a great saint. This marked her character. She felt that she was called to be a great saint. You might say it's a bit presumptuous, but it was part of her thinking, her feeling. But she realised, as I've already said, that she wasn't strong enough to be a great saint. That her character, her personality, and her own weaknesses. And she was reading Lives of the Saints, of St. Peter, of St. Joan of Arc, of all these great heroic martyrs. And she was saying, I'm too small compared with these great saints. So, as I said already, she was very, very logical and theological. And instead of giving up, like most of us would do, she put these two truths together. One, I want to be a great saint, and, quote, God cannot inspire unreachable desires. So God has given me this desire to be a great saint, and surely this is from him, and he can't let me down. Secondly, though, I'm not strong enough to be a great saint. I'm not heroic. I'm not brave. So putting those two together, she said, there must be another way that God, in his mercy and goodness, is going to help me in my littleness and weakness to be the great saint that he wants me to be. He will have to lift me to the heights of sanctity as a child is lifted by his or her parents. And this is the little way of spiritual childhood, of humility and confidence. It's Thérèse's little way. And this is how she worked it out and what it meant. It was partly that straight thinking I've just told you about, but there was a real moment for her. She said, this was, remember, the late 19th century. She said, I've noticed how there are lifts, elevators, in the homes of rich people. And they don't have to climb stairs. And she said, as I was thinking about these lifts, I was searching the scriptures for an answer to my dilemma. And I came across Isaiah chapter 66, where the Lord says, as one whom a mother caresses, so I will comfort you. You shall be carried at the breasts, and upon the knees they shall caress you. You shall be carried at the breasts. And Therese says, the lift which must raise me to heaven is your arms, O Jesus. The lift which must raise me to heaven is your arms, O Jesus. So, it seems very simplistic, doesn't it? Lifts, oh, Jesus loves me and will pick me up. Right? You could say this is very banal, almost. But for Therese, in her own language, it was the discovery of grace that's at the heart of the gospel, which is the life of faith, the love of God. It's a pure gift of Christ. We don't deserve our faith. We don't deserve, and we're not capable of living the Christian life, and especially of becoming the person that God wants us to be and that we want to be deep down. But this life that he calls us to is a pure gift, and God will give it to us just as a parent gives gifts to his or her children. She says, it's not in dazzling works or preaching the gospel or shedding my blood that I will become a great saint. It's the ability to love Jesus as a little child, and to prove that love by, quote, throwing flowers. That is, not to pass up any little sacrifice, any look, any word, to take advantage of all the little things and to do them all out of love. Just listen to that list again. Throwing flowers. That sounds very sweet and even a bit sickly, if that's not an imagery that appeals to you. But what does she say it means? It means not to pass up any little sacrifice, any opportunity, any look, any word, any thought, any gesture, to take advantage of every little opportunity to do something small for love. That's not sweet. That's the love of Christ invading the whole of our life, every pore of being, every second, every moment. So that's the little way. Realising I can't do big things, saying, okay, all I've got is little things, so let me do the little things with love, and let me trust that the Lord will help me to love as he wants. And after 7 years, she'd gone even deeper. And this is really the most profound element of her little way. She's still, at the end of her life, with an audacious confidence to become a great saint. But listen to this. Quote, that's because I'm not counting on my merits, since I have none. But I hope in the one who is virtue, holiness itself. It is he alone who, being content with my feeble efforts, will raise me up to himself, and covering me with his infinite merits, will make me a saint. Another phrase she used, and this is such a beautiful phrase, she said, I hope to enter heaven with empty hands. Isn't that interesting? You might think she's given up on her previous desire, yeah? Her previous desire was to be a great saint. You might say crudely, to do lots of holy things. And now she says, nearer the end of her life, I hope to enter heaven with empty hands. In other words, first of all, very cleverly, she thought, I can't do great things, so I'll do little things with love. And then she's gone even further, and she's realised that even in that, there was a temptation to think, I'm going to do wonderful little things. Yeah? I'm going to be this great person, doing lots of beautiful small things to the Lord. But she's even realised that to do the ordinary little things is very difficult, and also that there can be some pride and some selfishness in wanting to be good for God. In other words, she's learned the true meaning of humility, which is still to love, still to do everything she can to love, all her efforts, costing her everything, but not doing it in order to cling to the things that she's done. Not doing anything for her sake. Not doing it to be liked by other people. Not doing it to seem good in other people's eyes. Not even doing it so that when she meets the Lord at the moment of her death, she can say to the Lord, "Look how many things I've done for you." Put it a little bit more theologically, and she does this herself, not wanting to earn her salvation or her sanctity in any way, not claiming anything for herself as a possession, but knowing that everything is from Christ and is for Christ. That's the profundity of the little way. And it's nothing more or less than the gospel and the teaching of St. Paul, that Christ is everything.